Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Welcome to the Pro Basketball Talk podcast. I'm Dan Feldman. There are a couple things you need to know about my guest today. Number one, Seth Partnow is very smart. I talk to him a lot online. He says complex things, uses big words that I don't know that I often, he doesn't know this, but I often look them up before responding. So Seth, if you could dumb it down a little bit today, because we're talking, it's going to be a little bit harder for me to look it up before responding. But I have confidence he can do that, because the other thing Seth does very well is communicate some advanced statistical things in ways that even people like me can understand. The latest way he's done that is in the book, The Mid-Range Theory, Basketball's Evolution in the Age of Analytics. I've read it. I very much enjoyed it. I learned a lot from it. It reinforced some things I did know, right? I pay a lot of attention to basketball. It's not all completely new things to me, but it put it in ways that crystallize it, that'll stick better, and there's new things to learn. It's exactly what I'd be looking for in a book. I think it appeals to people of a lot of interest levels in basketball. There's things that can be introductory and get you through. And if you're already very familiar with basketball, there's a lot to learn more advanced. Really enjoyed the book. Very much recommend it. And the last thing I want you guys to know about Seth before we start is he hates rankings. But somehow, I don't know how this happened, I've convinced him to do 4 sets of rankings, and maybe he'll try and weasel out of it and say these are tiers and these are not exactly rankings. I don't know. I don't care. No, these are rankings. He's doing rankings. And the 4 rankings we're going to do today, because I think as we go through this process, we're going to have some jumping off points for a lot of discussion about statistics, analytics, how they integrate with the game, how Seth evaluates basketball. He knows basketball. It's not just the stats. But the 4 categories we're going to do are: which players are most underrated by box score statistics? Which players are most overrated by box score statistics? Which 3 players are most underrated by advanced statistics? And which players are most overrated by advanced statistics? If those categories sound vague, that's on purpose. So we can go some different directions with it. Seth, thank you for coming on. Let's just jump into our rankings. We're going to go 3-1. Let's start with underrated by box score. So however you want to take this, which player would you say in the NBA is the 3rd most underrated by box score?
So the first part about this, and yay rankings, and I'm very happy to be doing this. The first thing is, you know, what's ranking or rating by this? And, you know, for something like how someone appears via box score stats, I actually think PER is a reasonably good catch-all for that. I mean, we could argue about whether we're talking about per minute or per game or whatever, but I just think in terms of getting an ordered list, PER is probably a pretty good representation of quote unquote what the box score thinks of players. And if there's a sort of a through line to the players that PER quote that don't score well on PER, I think are better players than that, it's guys who don't interact with the ball very much. Guys whose offensive value is off ball, whose defensive and who are defensive players who aren't necessarily rim protectors, who put up big stats in terms of rebounds and blocks. So again, I am going to weasel because I'm not going to order them, but. I'd say the most.
All right. Wow. We really got you.
Because it's like it's sort of like, well, is this, you know, a lot of them are, for example, the guy who traditionally I would say has been most undervalued by.
Wait, hold on. We don't give away your number one. If I got you to rank him, don't I don't want to give. We'll work our way up to number one.
Okay. So for this year right now, I'd say number three is Matisse Thybulle. So he is of the 180 some players who are minute qualified in PER this year. He is entering today's games. He was 170th. So really, bottom 10% of the league. And you know, there's questions about him. Can he close games? Due to his offensive limitations, whatever. It doesn't matter. He's an all defense level player at an important position who is one of kind of the highest defensive event players of recent memory and perhaps all time. But that's stuff that doesn't, it's like, oh, he gets three steals instead of two. That's not a huge box score contribution. And he's very low usage and so on and so forth. So he's a guy who, anything where we're talking about recorded stat, like traditionally recorded stats, defense is almost always going to be undervalued or perhaps misvalued. And I think we'll get there on the other end of this list. The number two guy on this.
Well, here we're going to exchange number threes, then number twos, then number ones throughout these. So my number three ranks very high by PER, and he almost talked me out of it and had me go with Mikal Bridges, who I kind of had as an honorable mention. But I have Rudy Gobert written down, and I'll just stick with that. He's up around 25 by PER, elite. He gets the blocks, he gets the rebounds, but I'm not sure. I hear what you're saying about that as a stand-in for a traditional set. I've used that before, and I kind of like that. But I don't think that's everything. Rudy Gobert is averaging 15.5 points a game. And I think a lot of times traditional box score is how many points per game are you averaging? And I just don't think that comes close to capturing his value as a rim protector. He's improved so much as an on-the-floor defender. I know it's corny to talk about screen assists, but it's helpful to be a good screener, and he's a really good screener. He provides some gravity through his roles to the rim, just does all those things defensively that don't show up in the box score on the top of the ones that do.
He's also that is a good point, because sometimes we do maybe I'm even being too advanced when I'm talking about PER. It's like if we're if by your definition of the box score, we're literally yay points, which
almost
Gobert is a better offensive player than Gobert is the only player, minutes qualified player in the league with a true shooting percentage over 70% right now. Jared Allen is before he got hurt, dipped just under it. And yeah, he doesn't have shooting range past the length of his arm, but he's a monster offensive rebounder, and he dunks everything at the basket. And even though he's not a great foul shooter, he is one of the best players in the league at drawing fouls, relative to the shots he takes. So by some definition, I'd say you're right. But by others, he's in the top 10 in PER this year. So, between his efficiency and the rebounds and blocks, he is doing box score statty things.
Yes. It is interesting. I think this really just speaks to how much more advanced we've gotten in statistics, that PER now we're using as a stand-in for box score stats instead of in our advanced stats section that we're going to get to. But that's great. I mean, it's great that we've advanced and it's become more nuanced. All right, so who's your number two?
My number two is Duncan Robinson. He is so Thybulle is 170th. He's 173rd. Some of that is this year. He hasn't shot the ball as well this year, so his sort of efficiency numbers are below what they've been for the bulk of his career. But for guys who are elite off ball shooter, he's got a usage under 18, so he doesn't actually shoot that much. But how much defensive movement he creates by his presence makes him, from an impact standpoint, I don't want to say an elite offensive player, but in terms of impact, he's a high impact offensive player just because how much the defense has to pay attention to him. I mean, guys who can draw extra attention off the ball just by movement or not even being involved in the primary action of a play, that stresses a defense hugely. He's sort of heir to the J.J. Redick, Kyle Korver, at this point, probably you could probably put Seth Curry in there at this point, even though he's got probably more on the ball than any of those players. But just the guys who draw so much attention that, you know, you get the spacing assists almost. And this was, you know, Korver was probably most famous for that, where the number of times he'd come off a pin down and, like, it was usually Paul Millsap for those Hawks teams, and Millsap would just slip to the basket because both players in the screen were chasing Korver because they didn't want to get him to even catch the ball at the arc, let alone get a shot off. And, like, he never touches the ball in that play, but he created that basket for his, you know, for lack of a better term, gravity created that basket. And I think that Robinson is, you know, certainly among the players who are healthy, right up there with the elitist, not a word, whatever, of the off-ball shooters, of the movement shooters in the NBA today.
Now, how much for you is that context? Because obviously his shooting is extra important to the Heat, you know, with Jimmy Butler, with Bam Adebayo, you know, PJ Tucker can space from distance, but he's not running around like that. Like, how much of this is based on the Heat really need this element, or you think just a player like Duncan Robinson is bringing so much surplus value? I won't necessarily say regardless of context, but somewhat regardless of context.
I would say somewhat. I mean, I think that, you know, if you put him in a more spacing robust, like, he may not fit defensively, but, like, imagine, like, sort of the refractory effect of him in the Warriors offense. Like, put him, like, drop him in instead of, like, you know, Jordan Poole has more of the ball in his hands, but, like, it's just in terms of, like, the terror that he would create anywhere on the court, think of how much space that creates for, you know, Steph and Draymond to play two-man games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it, you know, now is that more or less impactful than it is for a sort of a spacing challenge team like the Heat? I don't know. That's a fair question. And that's, I think that's a point that we'll get into when we start to talk about some of the players who are overrated by advanced metrics, to tease that a little bit. But yeah.
I think one thing about somebody like Duncan Robinson that's in his favor is he'd fit well on good teams. Like, where you run into some how much is he helping issues are on not as good teams. And at that point, I'm just not worried about it anyway.
Right. And, you know, I think he would still help. Like,
sure.
You know, it might be harder to get him, like, they might be not do a good job getting him shots.
Right. Right.
Like, an elite shooter is an elite shooter. And, you know.
Yeah, I didn't put that well. I guess what I meant is helping less than he does, right?
Like, right, yeah.
You're losing some of the output. All right, my number two is Chris Paul, who is just a tremendous floor general. I don't love that term, but he is. I mean, he understands the game, one of the smartest players in the game. Just he's in complete control offensively, defensively. Somebody else who rates high by PER, but he's only averaging just under 15 points a game. You know, he's usually even in his better years up in the high teens for a long time. You know, he has some good assist numbers. He has some steals, but I just don't think his box score stats are eye-popping to represent that this guy is, you know, one of the very, very best point guards of all time and still playing at a super high level.
I think I would say the same thing to hit, like, you know, other end of the positional spectrum, but I think that, like, holistically his sort of traditional, like, his, like, I don't know, I guess when, like, maybe the better way of putting this is he a good fantasy player? And, like, Chris Paul is an elite fantasy player. And,
yeah,
like, especially if you start to factor in, you know, some efficiency stats, like, him and Gobert both are elite fantasy contributors. You know, I used to play in a very detailed, like, salary cap league, and those players are, like, both, like, no-brainer maxes. So I think that's, you know, in terms of like, you know, traditional, like, this was not a league that had any, like, the most advanced this league had was, instead of using field goal percentage and three-pointers made, it used two-point percentage and three-point percentage. So really, like, groundbreaking stuff.
Yes. You know, one thing in the book that I found very interesting, I was leaning toward Chris Paul anyway, I understand his statistical output is fairly good, but I just think it doesn't come close to covering how elite his play is. But one of the things you talked about is how good he is at ensuring his team does not commit turnovers. That you know, sometimes his turnovers might be up, but of course you'd rather have the ball in Chris Paul's hands a lot because he's going to make good decisions. And it's not like his turnovers are super high or anything anyway, but he's very good at limiting his team's turnovers. I was curious, though. Do you know offhand, like, what point guards come to mind who are the opposite? Point guards who, maybe whatever their individual turnover numbers are, even if they're good, bad, whatever, but where they're particularly bad at, hey, when this guy's on the court, their teams tend to turn it over a lot?
That's a good
question. I know I'm putting you on the
spot.
No,
that's a good question. I want to say it's kind of going to be guys in sort of the 3-and-D, like, point guard mold, like the Pat Beverleys. Mm.
Okay.
That's from the hip. I'm not sure. Your Russell Westbrooks and Reggie Jacksons are, but they're like high individual turnover players also.
Right.
So that's probably not exactly, but that would be my intuition would be with that sort of kind of player, the guy who doesn't actually give the sort of ball, the traditional ball security of a point guard. And so that means that you end up having, if you're Pat Beverly and you're playing next to, I don't know. I mean, in this year, he's playing next to D'Angelo Russell. So it's not like you're like bereft of ball handling. But maybe, maybe like Dennis Schroeder this year in Boston would have been sort of like that. Jason Tatum can handle the ball, but it's not like, I think that probably is a turnover increasing sort of situation to have him and Jaylen Brown, especially Jaylen Brown, like being the primary, I have the ball guys.
Right. All right. So for me, I thought there was a clear cut number one. Who was your number one for this category? Underrated by box score.
Robert Covington.
Oh, okay. This exposes how we went about it a little different.
He's a little bit in between Thibault and again, probably like maybe he maybe have aged out of this a little bit in terms of, but I mean, again, a guy who is never been a super high percentage 3-point shooter, but has been a willing, high volume, very deep shooter, and he shoots it well enough that it's like you have to respect him. He's not the weapon that like a Duncan Robinson is, but he's someone who like must be accounted for. And then his sort of defense is often misunderstood because he's not an elite on ball stopper, but over the last 6-7 years has been one of the like really good like help side defenders in the NBA, given his, his mobility and length and size to just, disrupt passing lanes, block shots from the weak side, protect the rim, slow the ball. Like that length and mobility also like allows him to kind of slow the ball down on like rotations out of double teams. So I think we've all seen the play where, the you run a pick and roll on one side of the floor, it swings to the opposite slot. And the guy wants to throw the ball to the pass to the corner, but the defender closing out to him kind of stunts just enough at that passing lane that they kind of, either double clutch or kind of tuck the ball in and do something else. And I think that, those are the kind of plays that don't really show up in stats, but just like that's disrupting the offense in a way that's pretty important, especially if you're, to cover up for mistakes elsewhere.
Yes. If we can jump back to Duncan Robinson real quick.
Yeah.
I think a case against him is, he can be, picked on defensively. Even ways Robert Covington for his flaws as a on-ball defender, he's not getting picked on like that. Do you think Duncan Robinson's underrated defensively? Are we overstating the problem generally of that defense? Or do you just think he's like that awesome of an understated offensive contributor that even if we have his defense right, I mean, he still belongs on this list?
By PER, he's the 12th worst player in the league. So I think that, okay. Yes, the defensive concerns are. Now, if you wanted to talk about, J.J. Redick like made himself into a decent defender, but his like size presented some limitations before he kind of aged out of it. Like Kyle Korver was actually a plus defender by the second half of his career. So he's sort of the poster for He's actually like, okay, yes, you think this, but it's not actually true. Like, again, not a guy who would necessarily be a great on-ball stopper. But Kakofer was 6'9", or still is. I mean, he's 6'9", very, you know, good anticipation, decent movement skills, and good length. And, you know, that, you know, good rebounder and weak shot blocker for a perimeter player as well. So a lot of... There's a lot of sort of hidden value there in those kind of guys that you wouldn't necessarily think of because they're not like slap the floor, get into a stance defensive types.
So I thought the clear number one was Draymond Green. If I have to hear one more time, oh, he got another triple single. I mean, this guy is phenomenal. One of the smartest players in the league. Superb.
Another
defender.
Elite fantasy player. So
right. So I think this is more just about our different ways of approaching this, which is good, right? It's good discussion here to get some different stuff. But he does so many things that don't show up in the box. We're directing teammates on defense, setting screens, the positional defense, taking away the post when they can go small. He gets a lot of assists, so maybe that's enough to cover his passing, but just a phenomenal passer, Hall of Fame player. He's averaging, 7-8 points a game, so he's not going to get that credit, I think, from people who just look at box scores, traditional box scores.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think that the flirting with a triple double every night because of, you know, for traditional box score watchers, the magic of the triple double does go some way to, even if it's like the classic, you know, Jason Kidd 12, 11, and 10 triple double is still something that has some cachet that might overcome sort of the more modest scoring totals.
All right, perfect segue to our list of most overrated by box scores. I have a hunch where we're going to end up at number one. At least this is an easy number one for me, but we're going to start at number three.
Have you ever wondered what the stars have to say about your favorite artists and writers? Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa, where I, your host and astrologer, Issa Nakazawa, read and interpret astrological birth charts of luminaries like W. Kamau Bell, Gia Tolentino, and so many more. You'll discover how astrology can unlock fascinating insights about these stars, and who knows, maybe you'll learn a little bit more about yourself. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
If your child is struggling in school, then IXL is right for your family. IXL is an online learning program for kids that covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. Backed by research, kids using IXL are scoring higher on tests. It's no wonder it's used in 95% of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Plus, a month of IXL costs less than an hour of tutoring. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/20. Visit IXL.com/20 to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Who is your number three on the player who is most overrated by looking at traditional box scores?
So most overrated. I think that generally speaking, like the guys who get most overrated at least in these measures tend to be bigs because, you know, they get rebounds and they get block shots and they shoot a high percentage from the floor because they don't shoot from very far out. So I think the number, even though I think he's a good player, the number three for me is Jakob Poeltl.
Ooh, interesting. By box score, really? I think he might be underrated by box score.
Well, again, I had to choose a measure of box score rating. So yeah. PER quite likes him. He's 25th in the league. And like he's a, you know, a
14 points a game, 9 rebounds, you know, you get close to that double-double, you can almost say he's averaging a double-double. That goes a long way, yes.
Yeah. But his
positional defense is not showing up in box scores, but I think is very impactful.
Yeah, but he's not an all-star level player. Like he's a guy who's sort of who's up there, and the other two guys are that are going to be on the list are
well. Hold on.
You know what? I and
Okay, you know, go ahead.
No, and like other players who, you know, might have been like, you know, also in the also nominated are kind of broadly similar. Like Yusuf Nurkic is another guy who's up there. Ivica Zubats, who both of them were slightly lower down. Christian Wood, like there's a type here we're talking about, I think.
So I agree with you 100% on the type. It just ended like most of my considerations are that type, but I guess it's going to come up more in overrated by advanced stats for me, because you're using advanced stats. My number three, and I didn't feel great about this. I feel a little better my one, too. My number three is Cole Anthony with the Magic. You know, he's a solid player. He's made very nice progress from his rookie year. He's averaging 17-6-6, which I think looks more impressive than it is. Not efficient, still turning it over too much, not defending well enough, like still figuring it out. He's very young. I'm not saying he's not going to be good. I like the progress I've seen, but I think you just look at the numbers, you might get a sense he's arrived more. This is something you've talked about in the book. Like, teams are going to accumulate a certain number of stats. Somebody's going to get them. This is a lousy Magic team, and he's a guy, I think, getting an outsized statistical traditional box score credit.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I put it in the book is just by showing up, and an NBA team is going to get 80 points, 25 rebounds, and 10 or 15 assists. And, yeah, even on a bad team, someone's going to, you know, that's a bundle of sticks that is just, like, sitting there. And someone on that team is going to come pick them up and, you know, very often the guys on bad teams who do that aren't really adding anything to the pile. They're just doing a good job of, like, you know, being a hungry hippo and scarfing up the, you know, the statistical marbles that are floating around.
And this is such a young Magic team where Cole Anthony, you know, has a little bit more experience than, you know, his rookie teammates like Wagner and Suggs. And so he's a little more adept at doing that.
Yeah, and plus gets to play, you know, at least more than Wagner, and probably a little more than Suggs too. Gets to play with the ball in his hands, although at this point it's probably good that Suggs doesn't have the ball in his hands.
Depends what your goals are.
But yeah, it's fair.
Who's your number two?
So my number two is Mitchell Robinson. And he's a guy again. I think the difference in how we're talking about this is I am factoring in like efficiency into box score stats, because like field goal percentage is a box score stat.
For sure.
So like, you know, Mitchell Robinson shooting 73% from the floor, and you know he blocks a ton of shots, and you know, but his, you know, that sort of overstates kind of his impact on both ends of the floor. I think I talked to Schwinny Pooh who refuses to let me use his real name from the Strickland on my pod on Monday. And he was pointing out that like a big part of the reason why it's been tough for Julius Randle to get easy shots a lot of the year is that there's always like a big unskilled center in the dunker spot for the Knicks, and you know, Julius Randle is Mitchell Robinson is like, you know, guy number one, the culprit number one in that area. I mean, Nerlens Noel might be culprit number one because I think Mitchell Robinson has better hands than Nerlens Noel, but just, you know, again, he's a guy who is in the top 30 in PER and just is nowhere close to that in terms of like his overall impact on the game, even though he is a, you know, a good lob threat and a, you know, solid overall defensive center, even if inconsistent, and you know, his benefit is much more rim protection and much less kind of all the other defensive stuff.
Yeah, so Mitchell Robinson is somebody I had narrowly missing the cut and overrated by advanced stats, which might just get into more how we're doing this, and I'm looking forward to getting that one. My number two is Julius Randle. So you look at his numbers, he's still averaging 20-10. I gave him a ton of credit last year. I thought he deserved a ton of credit for overcoming that spacing issue, being a good enough shooter from the perimeter, a good enough passer to overcome that. I thought that was an understated part of his really good year. He's having a really down year now, but it's still averaging 20-10. I think that's, you know, catches the eye and not efficiently. And then I think there's his defense isn't good enough. I think he benefits somewhat from having that other big out there, not having to do that responsibility where it's a tough trade-off, right? If you want to have that space around him, he might be your rim protector, and then you're going to have problems there. He's not good enough in that role. And then the other thing, which is hard to measure by statistics, box score advanced otherwise, like he seems pretty miserable this year. And I think that's, some of that is a product of the Knicks season, but I think some of it is contributing to the Knicks season. I mean, they get in a competitive game. He gets ejected. He's going after the fans. Like, I think there's a malaise, a bitterness that can infect a team. And it's really hard to pick out from the outside. You don't always know when it's happening. It can be hard to see, but I think this is a case where we can see it and say, what he's contributing, not quite like what you'd expect from a typical 20-10 player.
No, that's a good point. I guess it's because reasons. I've been sort of very in tune with the Knicks season this year. That those reasons are sort of my preseason opinion of RJ Barrett, there's stuff to talk about with him and Fred Katz at The Athletic wrote a good article today about like some substantial improvements he's made in his game basically since the turn of the year. But it sort of feels like there's already a recognition that you know Randall's stats, like his top line per game averages, are pretty empty this year. So
But I think that recognition comes from people not looking at just the top line stats.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So it's like, again, the part of the reason why like doing a ranking like this that is weird, and I like when we were planning this, I fought tooth and nail against naming actual players instead of talking about archetypes. And like, yeah, I think, you know, both the play, actually, it's funny, if we're talking about archetypes, both of the players that you named would have been like the archetypes I would usually pick. It's just that so happens that they're not players who, like, in the way I've chosen to pick how players are quote unquote rated by box. And I could have done any number of things. I could have done but just add up their box score stats and per game that. And yeah, I think that's
closer to what I did.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's would lead to different answers, but I think I would land closer to where you are. Yeah. Cause it's like the inefficient top scorer on a crap team and like the inefficient scorer on a bad offensive and a bad disappointing offensive team who once was an all-star and isn't anymore because of you know, the inefficiency and the everything else you're mentioning. So yeah, no, I don't disagree with your selections at all. I think they're both, you know, very solid. You know, and this is sort of a guy who we're not going to mention in this because he's been actually like, you know, quite good this year, and especially in late games, is DeMar DeRozan. And there's a lot of DeMar DeRozan is sort of famously denigrated by like advanced metric types, and that's it. But that's like, it's relative. It's like, I don't think anyone thought he was I don't think anyone credible thought he was a bad player. But he would but it's like he's the 45th best player in the league instead of the 15th best player in the league. And if we're talking about like, you know, a guy who's viewed as a franchise leader, that's being pretty down on a guy. Like, that's not like, you know, it's not like, you know, late model Russell Westbrook down on a guy the way that like metrics folks might have been, or you know, post Achilles Kobe, but it was still a pretty big disconnect just relative to sort of the both the top line numbers and the eye test. And I don't think we didn't you know, want to talk about most overrated by the eye test, but the thing that the eye test tends to overrate is difficulty. Doing things that are visibly hard, like, yeah, that's great, but you know, a dunk and a contested mid-ranger are worth the same. Why is everything you do a contested mid-ranger, and why are you never dunking it sort of a question.
But I think people can go too far the other way. I think I did for a while, in that as you go deep in the playoffs, it's harder and harder to get the dunks, and there's probably more value in hitting the contested mid-rangers. And maybe to a degree, we're not giving guys a chance to develop that. During the regular season, you can say, look, during the regular season, there's more opportunities to get better shots. But you get into those big situations, and you're not ready for it. I've become a little more patient with guys pushing their limits on those types of things. Not completely patient, but a little more.
No, I agree. This has come up a bunch this year, and you already mentioned Mikal Bridges, and like I think like it Phoenix has the luxury of being good enough that if they you know expend 4 possessions a game, letting Mikal Bridges explore the studio space with the ball in his hands. You know, if that costs them a game or two over the course of a year, for the purpose of either his development in that area or them finding out whether he can develop in that area or not, like, that's fine. That's great. A lot of teams don't have that luxury. But I think that's a perfectly, like, a, you know, certainly for teams that are pretty confident in their playoff, you know, their top six playoffing ability, like, yeah, letting those guys, like the guys who you might want to, you know, who might end up with the ball with six on the shot clock in a playoff series, you might want to get them some reps at that. Yeah, for sure.
So you've already mentioned my number one in this category, and it's Russell Westbrook. You know, all those years averaging a triple-double, showing up in the box score, and then even this year, he's still averaging 18-7-7. I think somebody who's only looking at the box score might say, well, why is everybody down on him? You know, it's, his numbers are still kind of there. I think people are overreacting. And no, I mean, he's got a very flawed game. He's chasing numbers a lot of times, so that increases the box score input. Inattentive defender. You know, he was a good player. He's a very good player. He's a great player at his peak, but a lot of it was having the athleticism to overcome his flaws. And as the athleticism declined, we're just seeing more of the flaws. He's a tough fit on a good team, maybe in particular this Lakers team, but maybe not. Like, it's hard for me to see a good team where he would fit. And we talked about this on the last podcast with Barry Trammell of the Oklahoman. You know, it's just going to be tough for Westbrook. He could maybe go to a bad team and raise their floor a little bit, but I'm not sure what bad team wants that. Maybe there's one. I don't know. It's a tough fit for him, even though his box score stats, 18-7-7, are not on paper at first glance atrocious.
But then you get into, you know, you get into any sort of shooting.
Right, like, yeah. Right. That's what I'm talking about. The spacing, yeah. Right? You got to be able to fit around other stars.
Just that, but I mean, the fact that I think that like the harbinger of his game kind of deteriorating was when his free throw shooting started to drop off. Because, like, you know, he's never actually been the most efficient finisher.
No, like he got there enough.
He got there a lot. And so, and like, you get there a lot and then you get to the line and convert the line and it works out. But then, like, you start the free throw shooting drops off and maybe you're trying difficult finishes more to not get fouled. And then when you do get fouled, you don't make the free throws. And all of a sudden, like, you know, the extra buckets you're getting, the extra points you're scoring that make up for the turnovers and the, optimistic mid-range bank shots that hit corner of the backboard. you just can't make up for that anymore. So, no, that's a, like, you know, especially for how you define it, that's a perfectly good one. Although I have, you know, I think my top guy is someone who is different player position, but kind of a similar thing. It's Montrezl Harrell.
Yeah. I like that answer.
You know, a guy he's been a guy who, especially in the regular season, has put up pretty monstrous numbers, like efficient scoring, rebounding, stuff like that, and then gets destroyed in the playoffs every year because he might be the natural heir to Carlos Boozer.
I like the section on Carlos Boozer in the book. That was one of my favorites and really crystallizing some theories there. In the same vein, I consider DeMontis Sabonis. I mean, he's a much, much, much better player, but also has better box score stats.
Yeah, he was someone I considered. Although I think that our buddy Nate Duncan has gone too far when he's been describing him as like the worst all-star. Like, DeMontis Sabonis is a good player. DeMontis Sabonis is it's difficult with him because he's such a hard fit on a great team.
Well, that matters. I agree with you. That also matters, you know, making a team good. Right, I don't think he can single-handedly make a team good, but he can make a certain okay team good, and there's value in that.
Yeah.
It's not championship or bust. But that archetype you were talking about with Carlos Boozer, I think he fits it. Montrezl Harrell fits it.
I think he is more skilled in terms of being able to like create offense overall, not just for himself. And I think that is a big difference between, you know, both Boozer and Harrell.
But don't you think there's something to the idea of you're not an outside shooter, you're a little bit smaller for an interior scorer, you're not moving well enough defensively? Like, I mean, Sabonis is way above and beyond in this type, but there's something to that type and how it translates to the playoffs, as you wrote about.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. And but again, the difference between a guy who, you know, is a great passer for certainly for a big man. Like he's not Jokic, but like relative to like the history of big men in the NBA, he is a great passer. Mm-hmm. I think that's compared to guys who are like pretty much black holes, like, you know, Harrell or Boozer or Mitchell Robinson or something like that, Jakob Poeltl. I think that's a categorical difference that sort of rescues him from that mud of empty regular season statiness.
Yes. Yes. I think passing is a big one where it doesn't always show up in the box scores. Obviously assists are an indicator, but somebody who, sometimes you get players who can get assists where they're in assist mode and sometimes they're in score mode. But the players who don't make those quick decisions, I think feel is probably the word you'd like to use on that. You know, that doesn't necessarily exactly show up in a box score. Doesn't necessarily even show up in some advanced stats. But can reduce.
Radio Andy.
Hey, it's Andy Cohen. Join me on Andy Cohen Live, where it's just you, me, and some of the world's biggest celebrities.
Paris Hilton.
Chelsea Handler.
Seth Rogen.
I love you, Miley. Thank you so much.
You can listen to Andy Cohen Live at home or anywhere you are. No car required. Download the SiriusXM app for over 425 channels of ad-free music, sports, entertainment, and more. Subscribe now and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
If your child is struggling in school, then IXL is right for your family. IXL is an online learning program for kids that covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. Backed by research, kids using IXL are scoring higher on tests. It's no wonder it's used in 95% of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Plus, a month of IXL costs less than an hour of tutoring. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/20. Visit IXL.com/20 to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Through overall values, so why don't we stick on overrated players and let's jump to players who are most overrated by advanced stats. On this one, I'll go first. And my list is going to be looking similar to your overrated by box score. just how we did it. But I've got Kevon Looney, number three. I think he's going to be the best player I have on this list. He's a solid player. But I think his advanced stats way overrate him for a few reasons. One, he's not, you know, a traditional floor spacer, but he benefits from playing on such a smart team. You have an elite passer like Draymond. You've got everything Steph is doing to space the floor. Like, he's been in the system. He knows the system. He fits the system well. But they're kind of working around his limitations in a way that I don't think are generally showing up in the advanced stats. And another flaw I see is he can't really ramp up his minutes. Conditioning-wise, all this, like, we've seen a pretty clear limit on how much he can play. And so, yeah, he's producing well when he plays, but there's a value in somebody who can do that over a longer stretch. I don't think he has that. And if you're just a lot of, I think, a flaw with advanced stats, how people tend to look at him, a lot of times you're just looking at per minute number of things or per possession. And so the durability doesn't always get properly reflected. So that's why I have Kevon Looney number three.
No, that's fair. And there's another piece that is something that is especially in a lot of regression based statistics can cause a player to be overrated is if they're the one and only, like, okay, Golden State has no other bigs. So if he's not playing the five and Draymond isn't available to the five, then it's like Otto Porter or Nemanja Bjelica or Juan Toscano-Anderson or something like that playing the five. And so the difference between their performance, especially defensively, between the Looney lineups and those lineups is going to be pretty substantial. And, you know, these a lot of these metrics are pretty are somewhat naive, and so they just sort of see that difference and sort of assign the credit to Looney for being a big part of that difference, when it's really like, you know, it's a flaw of roster construction that's making him look better. And that's a way that like players can tend to get overrated in advanced stats, is like, you know, it's I used to call it the Perk effect. When Kendrick Perkins and Nick Collison were like splitting center minutes for the Thunder, that really made Nick Collison was, even before Perkins was like his counterpart, like in terms of on off stuff, he was a very good player by advanced metrics. But like, you put him with Kendrick Perkins and he looks like one of the like 10 best players in the league, in like an adjusted plus minus model. And it's just like, cause he's not that guy. Like, you know, we saw it in the 2012 finals, like just like the, every game, like Thunder get their heads kicked in with their starting lineup, timeout, Perk is off the floor. It's that, like, that liability was just so obvious that like a good player who was not that guy would just get, you know, uprated substantially. And that's, you know, that's sort of a known flaw of, you know, regard of some of these metrics. Some of the better ones control for that a little bit by building in some box score stuff, but that leads to its own sort of foibles in other ways. And I think we'll get to why. And this is, by the way, this category is one that I don't know if I can responsibly even say properly overrated or underrated on advanced, just because like the methodology is so impactful in terms of which players tend to be outliers, that it's like you'd almost have to tell me going in by RAPM, by LeBron, by Darko, by EPM, who are the guys you have the biggest differences on, because those are all going to, like, different things are going to sort of ping those, each of those metrics, in different ways.
That's what I was trying to go across. You know, I do think it tends to correlate who rates higher or lower by these. Obviously, it's not exact. All right. So, well, I don't know. How is this going to go? Can I get a number three from you on most overrated?
I can throw some names out, and one of them is JaVale McGee.
He was an honorable mention for me.
Yeah, so this is illustrative of a kind of player who can get, especially on the defensive side of these, if there is any sort of like, it's called a statistical prior, where it's sort of like, okay, guys who have this combination of box score stats in the past have tended to be good offensive or defensive players. Tended to be doesn't mean they always are. So, you know, this is a type of player, and I'll name Hassan Whiteside here too as another one.
You're stealing my list.
Oh, okay. Well, so
Hassan Whiteside is my number one.
Okay,
we'll get.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, you get. I mean, so the, you know, these models like assume that, hey, big guy, a lot of defensive rebounds, a lot of block shots, must be great defense, must be responsible for the good defense. Now, I was going to say that like Hassan Whiteside is less so this year, because he's sort of getting the other half of that who you switching with, like, since he is like opposite Rudy Gobert, that's just going to make him look worse, because, you know, Gobert's awesome defensively, and even if this year he's been sort of slightly down in some metrics, like, he's still like, if you're his backup, you're going to look worse defensively because you're not that guy. So he maybe doesn't make my list this year, but in the past would have. But like,
well, his advanced stats in a lot of ways are up too. I mean, it depends what you're looking at. But some of them, he looks like an absolute superstar, and he's not that.
Yeah. And again, but that's, I mean, I think he's sort of been more the box score superstar almost than the advanced metrics, aside from, you know, the ones that do take, like, ironically, the ones that are not ironically, like, you know, that do take some box score information into account.
Oh, I mean, for sure. I guess I'm using advanced stats that account for box score. Yeah. I mean, he's winters per 48 is 231. His PER is, you know, up above 22. Very impressive there. I mean, I've talked to him about this. Like, I'm not sure how much he's changed his mentality, but what do you mean? I'm not a good defender. Didn't you see me block that shot on that play? And it's, you know, yeah, there's more to it than just block shots, but that's what gets what shows up in the box score, and then, like you said, often goes into other advanced stats. Maybe not the ones you're looking at for these purposes, but some of them. So you already mentioned my number one. I got my number three. My number two is DeAndre Jordan. Has fallen off a lot. His advanced stats, at least some of the ones I'm looking at, have not fallen off quite that much. He's just so uninvolved often. He just doesn't, the energy's not there to play that role. You got to play with a certain amount of energy. He's like still accumulating some stats, but to me, it's like the lowest of low hanging fruit of, oh yeah, here's an open shot. I'll dunk it. Like not rolling, setting screens, rolling the rim hard enough, as often enough as he used to, like not as active defensively as he was. He's probably always overrated defensively, but now it's just like nothing there except for, you know, doing the bare minimum that shows up, in some of these advanced stats that probably over-index on efficiency.
Yeah. So my number two is Gary Payton II.
Ooh, I like that.
So Payton is an archetype of a type of player who, year to year, there's great volatility in this, and it's sort of a low-minute role guy who, on one hand, is sort of happens to be standing on the floor when good things have happened for his team, of which he's probably contributed some, but just by virtue of sort of those low minutes, he maybe gets a particularly good slice of shot making for and against. But also, these measures, like most of these advanced measures, are not, even though they're usually taken as such, they're not measures of how quote unquote good a player is. They're a measure of how effective they are in how they've been used. And so Gary Payton has been used in a pretty unique role this year. I mean, he's point of attack defender, or he's basically like playing defensive point guard, offensive power forward. And in the past, when he's been had to play more of a ball handler role on offense, he's sort of torpedoed his team's offenses. Now he's gotten better. He's going to be a better corner 3-point shooter. He's going to be a better cutter. So he's found ways to be more effective. So it's not like I'm saying he's bad or anything like that, but I am saying that the idealized situation that Golden State puts him in makes it completely overstates his level of play. Like, you know, for example, by estimated plus minus, he's, you know, a top 5th percentile player in the league this year in terms of impact. And like, he's been good, but like that just doesn't really pass the sniff test, does it?
No. I mean, he's definitely overrated, but I think there's something to the idea that it is capturing. You take this player, he can be very effective if you can find this role for him. I do think he's not that effective. That is overstating it. That's why I like it. But he is a real helpful player to them because they figured out how can we play to your strengths.
And that's great. And you're right. But again, that does the classic example of this back in the day was Matt Bonner, who by adjusted plus minus and regularized adjusted plus minus best player on this world because Greg Popovich realized we can use him in this situation and not in that situation. So by almost lopping off what would be the really bad minutes from his sample, like makes him look like a better player than he was. He was very effective, but I don't know if that's the same thing as saying he's really good, because like that effectiveness is wholly situational.
Yes. All right. So who do you have number one?
I'll throw a dart at this. I don't know.
I love the confidence. My number two is, but number one, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. No,
give me a name. Who's your tier one A?
So a guy who constantly shows up like high on these things, who I'm usually like, nah, I don't know.
I'll say it. Come on. You're thinking of somebody. You just don't want to say it.
No, I don't actually. I don't actually have a player in mind because it's like.
Oh, you're just stalling. You
know, yeah. I'm stalling. I'm completely stalling. Yeah, I don't have a most overrated this year, especially this year because the like everything has been so weird. So it's hard to give a most overrated, but I think I kind of think we've covered sort of the two situations where, or some of the situations where players tend to get overrated by these stats. So, yeah.
I'll give you one. Yeah. That maybe, I mean, how about Ben Simmons? How about Ben Simmons in regards to his advanced stats are good. I think as you go into the playoffs, you're going to run into problems. And then there's the availability issue. Like availability matters. And that's not something you're going to quite figure out when you look at just his advanced stats over the years.
No, that's a fair point, actually. But the flip side of that is Ben Simmons actually kind of ticks a box for a player who, in some ways, like especially defensively, I think advanced metrics underrate him.
Agreed.
I talked about this in the book a little, I think, or maybe it was an article, but I don't remember. So, like, okay. Rudy Gobert has very defined strengths as a defender. And so you play him in a way that like, hey, he's going to be near the rim and block shots and deter people from going there. And that's the way we're going to use him because he's good at that. A player like Simmons who can do a lot of different things and do them credibly. It's a lot easier to end up deploying him either by necessity or sort of by mistake in like his, you know, his third best, like he still does it credibly, but his third best way he could play defense. And since we don't have a great way, like we can't always measure it perfectly. Like maybe his best defensive role is as a help defender, but you end up using him because nobody else can guard Trae Young. So you have him guard Trae Young and he's like, he might be the best guy on the team at doing that, but his actual impact at doing that is less than it would be if he was playing free safety. Or something like that, or right. If he was playing small ball five or whatever it might be. But because there's this optionality of you know Rudy Gobert is say he's a plus four defender as a rim protector and a minus one as a switch guy. Well, you never play him as a switch guy; you just have him protect the rim, so he's always a plus four. Whereas you know Ben Simmons can play any number of styles and ranges from like you know plus three to plus one in all of them, so he's always going to be a good defender. But you end up as overall, he ends up looking worse because you're playing him half the time in his plus one role and half the time in his plus three role, and so now he looks less good compared to Gobert than he might be, and that versatility in and of itself probably has some value from a team construction standpoint. Now, all that said, his exploitability, his apparent exploitability of his offensive limitations do cut the other way. So he's kind of a fascinating player to examine in this context.
One other one I wrote down as a candidate, a similar type, is Markelle Fultz, who is not the shooter he looked like he could be coming out of college, where he's choosing not to take those, right? Like where the player's choosing not to do the thing that would reflect poorly in stats. And no, he's doing well enough in the other things. I'm just not sure that that translates as he would ideally grow into a bigger role.
So I will name like one more player type that again is probably more defensively tends to get overrated. And that's the sort of some high foul perimeter guys. Pat Beverly and Dylan Brooks are two guys that come to mind because they do like a weird thing that almost like helps them defensive, like their defensive kind of adjusted metrics is they commit a lot of fouls, which means they're in foul trouble. They go to the bench in foul trouble. The team's in the penalty. Offensive ratings tend to be 3 to 5 points higher. In the bonus for obvious reasons, then both because of the two shot fouls, but also teams are more reticent to not be as physical when they don't have any fouls to give. They get away with some fouling before they put their team in the bonus. Then they go to the bench and their teammates have to play in that harder environment. So they actually almost sabotage the guy who comes in for him. And that makes them look better by comparison. So that's of the sort of the archetypes that tend to tickle these metrics. to a player's benefit. Those are some of them. That's another one of them that I tend to look for. And those are two guys who historically have, you know, have very high rates of actually fouling, while it, like non-shooting fouls in the penalty, which is a big no-no. But so that balances that a little bit. But then they go to the bench and like De'Anthony Melton has to now play 8 minutes of a quarter in the bonus because Dylan Brooks like hacked twice.
Dylan Brooks and Patrick Beverley, 1A and 1B on your list. Got it. Wrote that one down. Let's go to most underrated by advanced stats. This is the one I wanted to save for last because it's the one I'm most interested to see how it shakes out. Because I think advanced stats generally probably come closer to lining up with how we evaluate players than traditional box scores has. By we, I mean you and I in particular. And we talked about some of the guys who can kind of break the systems. I'm not sure where we're going to go on underrated by advanced stats. I'll start off. My number three is Tyler Hero. And on all of these, I'm not quite sure why they're not showing up higher in advanced stats. Maybe you can explain some of this to me. I'd feel more comfortable with my choices if I knew what was going on, why I saw it differently. But Tyler Hero, coming off the bench for the Heat, filling a huge role, creating a lot of offense by himself. I think that's maybe what's missing a little bit. But his usage rate is high. Like, that should show up. He's reasonably efficient. He's just creating a lot of things somewhat out of thin air. And so I think he's playing even better than his advanced stats would show. What do you think?
I mean, maybe, but it's sort of like, what does the scoreboard do when he's on the floor? And it's the impact there is more muted, like good but not great impact. Gives plenty back on defense. That's going to be a big one in terms of why a guy might not show up as well in this. And we can, you know, that's sort of a roiling debate in like, is most of these stats kind of treat offense and defense as equal? And I'm not sure that that holds, especially kind of at the smaller end of the positional spectrum. Trae Young being one of the best offensive and worst defensive players in the league, that doesn't mean they cancel out, and they don't. He still shows up pretty strongly positive by most advanced metrics, or by all that I'm aware of. But still, it probably like the balance, and I've never been a big Trae guy, but I do think that like the detriment of his defense relative to the benefit of his offense is probably overstated, but that's a positional thing as much as anything.
So who do you have number three?
So there's sort of like the only player that I was thinking about this, that over time that really like, no, he's the guy that comes to mind is Klay Thompson.
Yeah. Yeah, so, not this year so much.
Not this year so much, but
over time, yeah, agreed.
So there's a few different things going on here. One, first of all, with any sort of like, you know, like the number of things. Okay, a guy who's playing with other great defenders. So like again, we talk about who subs in for a guy. Like for a lot of the his best years, he comes off the floor. Andre Iguodala comes on the floor. It's like, well, their defense gets even better now. And that's like, okay, that reflects poorly on Klay in those things, but that says almost as much about like, you know, the defensive lineups that they could put on the floor in those situations. And in metrics where there is like a box score component, he's a low defensive event player. He doesn't get a lot of rebounds, doesn't get a lot of steals. I think he's a very good, or at least before his injuries, was a very good sort of off-ball defender, very good at like navigating screens, but wasn't a guy who, you know, like again, he didn't get a lot of rebounds. And some of that is, you know, he's playing with a point guard who ends up, you know, Steph Curry's always been good at collecting those, you know, getting those hungry hippos rebounds that we were talking about earlier. Steph has always done that well. Draymond has always been an excellent positional rebounder. So there are just less to go around. So that like in defensive metrics with a box score component, he looks worse. And then the other part is like the some of the reason that like these metrics simply can't pick up on is like, and Klay is sort of the best player I can think of in this era is sort of the latent ability that isn't like accessed every game, but then, oh wait, we need him to go nuts in Game 6 against Oklahoma City, and he can easily do that. He can score 34 points in a quarter. He can do these. He can have, like, if there was a situation where he were more featured, these things might happen more. But because he's almost on a team like the Warriors, he's almost a decoy more than players of his overall ability might be in other situations. He doesn't really get the chance to express exactly how good he is as much as his ability could in another situation.
Yeah, that's a great point. I felt for him when he was upset about not making an all NBA team, not getting the supermax criteria, and I didn't think he deserved to make an all NBA team. I look at all NBA as what were your contributions over that regular season. But that's not really directly tied to how valuable he is for the Warriors. That doesn't reflect what he can do in the playoffs. And so that's a real flaw with the Supermax system.
I mean, he was bad at not playing with Kevin Durant. No, I say he was bad at not playing with Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. If he'd have been better at not playing with those guys, he would have been, like, he would have shown up as better and probably made an all NBA team. So damn it. Like, why? That was stupid. It's worked out okay for him, I think, over his career. But yeah, so that's, again, this is, I've successfully fought your hypothetical pretty well, but I think that Clay is a player who probably illustrates. Another one is you know, I think we talked about it a little bit with Ben Simmons. You know, versatility can almost be a drawback, in terms of advanced metrics. And the third one is you know, guys who are playing hurt, you know, playing hurt or playing unmotivated or playing for teams that don't care. You know, any like, all of these metrics are sort of built on everyone's trying their hardest all the time. Everyone's healthy and trying their hardest all the time.
Right.
And so they, like, you know, they can't see that James Harden is pissed off about Kyrie Irving doing whatever he's doing. They can't see that, you know, they can't see that at the start of this year, Dame Lillard probably shouldn't have been on the floor because of his, mm-hmm. because of his core injury. They can't see that, I don't know, LeBron is probably more focused on catching Kareem than catching whatever team's ahead of the Lakers in the playoff, standings this year. He's not maximizing towards the scoreboard. He's maximizing towards his score total a little bit, which probably, you know, is going to end up dragging his sort of impact metric stuff down a little this year.
I think some of this fits the number one guy, unless, I guess I'll circle back to two. But number one is Lu Dort, who I think by some advanced stats just looks like a lousy player, and I don't think he is. I think there's value in the energy he brings. He's stuck in a bad situation in the Thunder. He's overburdened with what they're asking him to do, and so I think that shows up. But even within his role, I think he's better than the numbers show. Some of what he brings defensively, there's some Clay stuff there where he's getting into guys, being aggressive defensively. Maybe he falls on that foul spectrum where I'm not digging him enough. But there's a lot of positives defensively, too, that I don't think are showing up in things captured by stats, advanced or otherwise.
No, and I think that's a really good point about, you said, overstressed. And I think that is a pretty easy way, especially for young players, to can show up as, you know, strong negatives because they are asked to do too much too soon on bad teams and they don't do it well enough. And they'll put up some superficial numbers, but their efficiency will be horrible and they won't be driving team winning. And it's like, it's okay. Yeah, he's not good yet, but he, you know, I think, you know, early in the year, we probably saw this with Cade Cunningham a little bit.
And Cade Cunningham was an honorable mention for me because one of the things you get into, well, any statistic, it's covering the past. It's covering things that have already happened. Cade Cunningham is a much better player at this moment. We're just talking about who's underrated right now. He's much better than he was early in the year, but early in the year is dragging down his season-long numbers, however you want to look at him.
Yeah, he's a good example of the playing. Like, he wasn't really playing hurt, but he was basically, like, his first five games in the NBA were his training camp. And so, like,
right,
because of the preseason injury. And so that, like, you know, that certainly did not get his career off to a great start. from a statistical standpoint. And you know, and also, like, again, a guy who, you know, some of his benefits are like some of his best talents are like court vision and feel and awareness. And, you know, he's slinging the ball all over the floor to teammates who can't make shots. It's sort of hard to express that helpfulness if you know, he's playing with maybe one other shooter, which is funny because that sounds like him in college too, where he was, you know, he was a guy who, like, the draft model people were down on last year because they didn't, in part because he's like, oh man, for a top prospect, he's got a pretty mediocre statistical profile. It's like, yeah, well, he had COVID and also he has like about the worst context for a player, for a top player that I can remember in college. Like, he's sort of the anti Jalen Suggs last year, where Suggs had the perfect situation to look good. It wasn't just like Cade had bad teammates. He had bad teammates who also got in his way. Which, you know,
right.
Like, if he's just got to go like 1-4 flat every possession, he could have put up some numbers, but like the other guys in Oklahoma State, like, also thought they should have the ball in their hands. They just sucked. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Can I get a number two from you?
Just, you want me to just throw a name out?
I mean, it's your rankings, but yeah, I absolutely want you to throw a name out.
It's my rankings. Yeah, I've been trapped. I've been trapped doing rankings.
You did three rankings, and I'm very proud of you. And now I'm on the fourth set, and I hear it fizzling. I hear your interest in rankings dwindling. You only have two names left, and we've made it all the way through.
I just ran out of steam. And really, I should have had a spreadsheet in front of me to do this if we're talking about like advanced stats, but I don't. So,
you can make it Cade Cunningham if you want.
In general, Cade or a Scotty Barnes, like,
yeah,
both like might be again because because of that growth factor you're talking about. But, you know, at the same time, like, has. As good as Scotty Barnes has been at times this year, over the course of the season, his impact has been okay. Like, especially like Evan Mobley's has been just like,
right,
much better. But like Evan Mobley was also like protected a little because he didn't have to guard centers most of the year because they had Jared Allen. So
protected defensively, offensively, yeah. They've asked him to do way more than I thought he'd be capable of, and he's handling it.
I mean, aside from he's still like the jump shooting is still a problem, but
sure, but the passing,
yeah.
Is beyond what you'd expect from a rookie big man.
Yes.
My number two, I'm gonna give you a second to think about your number one. I'm gonna let you slide in with Cade Cunningham as your number two, but we still need a number one. My number two is Buddy Hield, and this is one where maybe you can help me out, maybe you're gonna tell me I'm crazy, but
you're crazy.
Okay. I see the floor spacing. I see the shooting. He's somebody who I think could ramp it up. I think he's been in a miserable situation with the Kings. But I don't know. I don't think he's great, but his advanced numbers are pretty bleh. And I think he's better than that. I think he's like either like the high end of okay or the low end of solid, which is way beyond what his advanced numbers are.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't disagree that he's someone who probably is a little better, but it's like a little better. Excuse me. And a little better gets him to where, I guess that would be my, you know.
He's somebody I also could see fitting in with his shooting ability, right? Like, I don't know. He's just been in such bad situations. It's obviously somewhat speculative. But I don't know, somebody who can shoot like him, I think he could defend better than he does. Maybe you see it in some spurts. I don't want to give him too much credit for not defending well when he could, but there's something to, you know, like we've been talking about, the capability of doing more in a different context. I don't know. For me, this was the hardest list. I've come up with three names, and I hear you on, okay, maybe he's a little underrated, but only a little by advanced stats. But so far, you've only given me two names. You owe me one more name for somebody underrated by advanced stats. I've stalled as long as I can. One more name, Seth. Who do you got?
And then I immediately started sneezing, so I had to mute myself. So
I see. I thought you just, like, hung up.
No, it's and see, my body is rejecting the demand to the demand to I don't know. Again, it's part of the problem is like picking out where someone is rated. And I mean,
All right, give me somebody underrated by estimated plus minus, that which I think mainly because people like you have told me is the best publicly available all-in-one stat. I know we don't like all-in-one stats, but if you're going to use one as a quick and handy, that's the best one.
I mean, if you're doing a quick and dirty, especially if you want to look at like a single year, like EPM is kind of where it's at. So someone who I think is underrated currently by EPM. I actually had someone and then I lost it. So this is great radio. Good job, Seth.
All right, I'm going to let you off the hook. You did three full sets of rankings. Your body is breaking down. I've asked too much of you. I appreciate it. The mid-range theory, basketball's evolution in the age of analytics. Get it wherever books are sold. It's fantastic. Seth, thanks for coming on.
I have a name.
Yes.
And this is right. And it's young guy who's gotten better. Jonathan Kuminga.
Oh yeah, I like it.
Yeah, how's that?
Raw ability was not ready early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, another guy who probably is some of the other boxes we're taking is I'm just like kind of looking at guys who are like download list. DeAndre Hunter hasn't really been healthy this year. Probably better.
Right. Oh, that's a good example. Yeah.
Yeah. Well. I think those are two names that I can end with.
Perfect. And now I don't even have to force Cade Cunningham onto you. You gave me two on your own.
Yay. Awesome.
Thanks, Seth.
You're welcome. I'm broken out into a cold sweat and I feel like I have to cleanse myself at the altar and I got to put something in tears. Maybe I got to go put the Fast and Furious movies in tears now. get away from Fast Five tier all by itself at the top. But anyway,
ooh, I had to go this far to get Seth Partnow hot takes. Love it.
Yeah. Well, that's the one. I mean, Fast Five is the one with the safe, right?
I think I have seen one.
Okay. Well, yeah, the one with the safe is like unquestionably the one of the great action movies of all time. So that's tier one A.
Do I? Fast Furious. Do I have to watch the other ones to watch the one with the safe, or can I just go watch that?
I think you just go watch the one with the safe. Like, there might be an in joke or two that you miss, but like it's the just the you'll if you watch it and like the Rio street scenes aren't like the craziest thing you've ever seen, then yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna go do that.
I've assigned you homework. You assigned me list making homework that I only got half complete, and now I'm assigning you Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah, I think we know who came out ahead here.
Have you ever wondered what the stars have to say about your favorite artists and writers? Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa, where I, your host and astrologer, Issa Nakazawa, read and interpret astrological birth charts of luminaries like W. Kamau Bell, Gia Tolentino, and so many more. You'll discover how astrology can unlock fascinating insights about these stars, and who knows, maybe you'll learn a little bit more about yourself. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.